One thing that I'll say that really applies to all of these is something we talk about a lot in our program. And that's kind of this idea of like building it instead of fixing it, building up your skills, whether it's mentally, strength-wise with your trainer, with your coach, like you're building all of these things as opposed to waiting until there's something that needs to be fixed. So you've built that relationship with the physical therapist before you're like, okay, now my knee's bothering me. You know where you're going to go so that you kind of have those contingency plans. And that's going to be really helpful in getting you back to training quicker, getting you ready if you've got a race coming up, and then also just calming your mind down when it starts to spiral, when any of these things pop up.
Hi, everyone. This is The Podium, and I'm Dr. Kevin Sprouse. Our podcast originated as a resource for my practice where I work with professional athletes and high-performing individuals from around the world. Today, it has become a forum for an even greater audience, and we welcome everyone as we discuss the principles of performance and then disseminate pertinent, actionable information with our patients in mind. One thing to note before we begin, the content of this podcast is not meant as medical advice. This is for general informational purposes only. Welcome to The Podium.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Podium. I am Patrick Morris and I am joined today by Dr. Kevin Sprouse.
Good morning, Patrick. We've got, I guess what amounts kind of to a long single topic Q&A. One question, one long answer.
Yeah, we got some great feedback from a Q&A we did a long time ago. A listener just sent an email with like four or five ideas. I was like, thank you for sharing these with me. This is great. So today we're going to be talking about kind of assembling your own high performance team and who should be on that team or who you might want to like look to kind of communicate with.
Yeah, a lot of the athletes we work with come from sports where they have to do this on their own. You know, it's if you're in the NBA or Major League Baseball or something, you've kind of got a team around you, college sports too. But then you get outside of that and a lot of sports are very individual. And then from the recreational standpoint, regardless of where you come from, your goal typically is to perform at your best and do it with some resilience, be able to get through a season without injury and illness, and having some sort of team around you to help with that, I think is really important toward those goals. The other part is that a lot of people who get really into competitive recreational sports come from a collegiate sport background. Not everybody, certainly. I mean, it wasn't the case for me. But I think there's a number of folks who start in some sort of high school, college, fairly elite type program, but they're never going to be pro. But they're used to having a trainer, a team doctor, a coach, you know, folks to go to with these questions. And then they get out of that environment. They still want to perform, but they don't have resources anymore. So this is a really common question that comes to us. And I think it's going to be a fun one to address.
Yeah, it was really interesting when we first started working with a few of the golfers, we realized that they kind of have both the opportunity of putting together their own team and kind of piecing that together, but also that you have to do it. So there's like a little bit of extra on the front end to kind of make these connections, build up these contacts. But I really like the idea of thinking about this before maybe you need all of those things so that you have an idea of, okay, if this, then that sort of a deal. When you're going throughout your season, you kind of know these names that you can call upon. And a lot of us have built that up over time. You know, I've been to plenty of physical therapists, massage therapists, whatever it is, but it's nice to just kind of lay it out and think about it and put a little structure to it.
Yeah. I agree. So let's kind of go down maybe position by position. And it's not necessarily the case that everyone will need every one of these types of people on their team. But I think, like you said, having a relationship, knowing who you could go to when you do need that resource, because you may not need a physical therapist all the time. Hopefully you don't. But in those times that are almost certain to arise where you do need someone, you don't want to be scrambling to find out who you should see, how you get in with them. Does your insurance work with them? Like all the specifics around it. Cause then you're 4 weeks into needing a PT and you still haven't gotten in to see them. So I think approaching this with that mindset of some of these individuals, some of these roles will be uniformly beneficial to almost everybody listening to this. And then others, just making sure you have those contacts and know where to go when you need them.
Yeah. So we'll start off here, and I've listed coach, which is, you know, a very vague term for this one, but for whatever sport that you do, there's definitely going to be a coach that can help you with that. And I think even if you're really confident in your training currently, it's really valuable to have at least some period of time where you've worked with somebody else. And I think it's also a good place to start, because typically an endurance coach or cycling coach, whatever it's going to be, is going to be a good source of reference for a lot of these other positions that we'll talk about.
Yeah. Somebody who fills that coach role really well is also usually well connected, like you said. And I think when you're going to find a coach, and I agree, I think most people benefit from a coach at some point in their training, whether they're a professional or recreational athlete in endurance sport, golf, team sports, like anything you do, if you seek out somebody who's really expert at prescribing the training, working through the specifics of kind of the biomechanics, whether that's on a bike or running or again, golf, like swing sports, basketball. I mean, it doesn't really matter, whatever it is you like to do. If you're trying to do it at a high level, having some external input is really important. I will say it's an area that's very personal. So somebody could have the best resume as a coach, but not be the right coach for you. If you listened, I guess, last week to the conversation with Robbie Ventura, I think we kind of made that evident that the personality, the motivation, how that coach works with you is crucially important. So when we have patients who are looking for a coach, I think, I at least try to always give them two or three options and recommend that they interview that person. So they go to them, talk about what they want, talk about how they're motivated, hear about how that coach works, because all three that I give them to talk to are, they're qualified. They are good folks. I mean, there's a reason I'm saying talk to these three, but I don't have an expectation that all three would be the right fit. So it's a bit of a process, I think, to find a coach. It's not just hiring the first one you come across.
Yeah. And I think that that idea extends to all of these different positions is that you're never stuck with just the one person or that one suggestion. There's always other opportunities out there. And I think something that's a good sign of like a coach who does well is someone who's not trying to necessarily fill all of the positions of kind of this team we're going to talk about, which happens a lot in coaching. I mean, as someone who does it, you know, I have a background in strength training. I've got some endurance training. I've got some nutrition things like that, like all stacked up, because it's good to be a generalist in all of those things, but knowing your limit and being willing to refer out, bring other people in and kind of be collaborative, I think is the sign of a coach who's going to be serving you better and also brings the athlete more value, because they're not just kind of sticking to say, oh, I need to do everything for you.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think another good mark of a coach is recognizing that there's often a seasonality to their utility with that individual. So in other words, oftentimes I think if somebody has been with a coach for a number of years, there may be nothing wrong in that relationship, but somebody may an athlete may plateau. And a good coach, in my experience, is very willing to have that athlete say, hey, I think I want to work with someone else, try something different, and is totally has their back and recognizes that, you know, sometimes you got to mix it up. Sometimes you got to throw in some different stimuli and see that person go away. And oftentimes in my experience too, they end up coming back. Like they learn something different for someone else and come back to their original coach because they had a really good relationship. So I guess the inverse is more important. Any coach that is very possessive, any coach that doesn't share their training. So I've worked with pro athletes through the years where coaches will not share what the training plan is. That to me is a huge red flag. There's nothing that proprietary and magical about, you know, the construction of a training plan. That
he's doing 8 minutes instead of 12 minute intervals. That's the secret.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just silly. So that type of mindset or mentality is one that I would say to definitely avoid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about that relationship and finding the right fit, sticking with it. And then if you are a coach and you let somebody go, they're typically going to be more likely to refer other athletes that come to them to talk to you. And it's just keeping that relationship alive is so important. And I think that shows the value in that person.
Yeah, I agree. And it may be another aspect that you see in coaches. Some of them work entirely online, you know, and even grossly limit the amount of phone conversations and things like that. Because it's their time. I mean, I get that. I'm not saying that as a detriment. And for some people, they might actually like that better. You know, they don't enjoy the conversations. They want very quick, like cut to the chase back and forth of an online or a virtual coaching plan. What I'm not saying is get one that's a cookie cutter, you know, that is your 6-week plan that gets sent to you. I'm not saying those are useless, but that's not, you're not really hiring a coach in that point. But some athletes will want a coach who is very willing to have long-ish conversations with them on a regular basis, and others don't need that. And so also as an athlete, know what you're looking for in a coach, because there's different ways to practice the art. And if you don't know what it is that you want, it's hard to find the right fit.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll move on here to, I've got physical therapist, and then I'll kind of add trainer below that one. So I loved the quote, like, show me an athlete who's never been injured and it's somebody who's never won. So typically
I've not heard
we're going to get pretty close to getting something going on. So, I mean, we've all been to a physical, I would presume most people listening have been to a physical therapist. So I think that's a really important one to have in your corner.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I guess the variation on that quote, which I love, I've not heard that. I tell athletes all the time, from pediatric athletes that I've worked with in the past, you know, little leaguers, things like that, all the way up to the pro ranks, you know, there's such a, when injured, there's such a psychological response to that is usually a spiraling, you know, downward, like this is all over kind of thing. Every single athlete gets injured. The best athletes get injured, I won't say frequently, but, you know, with a frequency across a career that is not insignificant, because they are pushing at an extreme level. And so, you know, that's part of the sport. Hopefully those injuries are small. They're addressed early. The athlete's back very quickly. And that's where the physical therapist comes in. So, yeah, I think having a physical therapist that you know and trust and can go to, specific to your sport, is huge. So if you're a cyclist and you go to the best physical therapist in town, but he works with overhead athletes, you know, throwers and swimmers, and, you know, maybe not going to be the best fit. But if you're a cyclist who finds somebody who is maybe a cyclist themselves or has worked with lots of cyclists, then you're on a much better path. Same with runners, same with overhead athletes, same with swing athletes, you know, Olympic lifters, whatever it is. You want somebody who understands intimately, not what you do, not just kind of, you know, oh yeah, I've worked with a few runners in the past. That's probably not where you want to be going. And the best way to find those people, in my experience, talk to the local community. If you're a runner, talk to the runners in town about who they go see. Oftentimes you may find that on those group runs, there's a physical therapist or two there training with you. You know, it's the same if you're a golfer or a cyclist or CrossFit, you know, there's probably a PT in your training group or even at the gym.
Yeah. When I was doing track workouts, there was a local PT that would go out to the track, and I definitely was not self-conscious about my running form. But when you build up those relationships and have somebody that you know you can call upon, you're going to be less hesitant to go to them when something starts to pop up. And you kind of led with that, is that you want to get it addressed quickly. And it's, you know, little small things are bound to pop up, and not being afraid to go in, because it's typically, you know, a much calmer experience. You go in, I think, oh, my labrum's torn, like it's done, I can't run anymore. You go in, you're like, all right, let's do a few of these things. They get you a little bit out of pain. You start feeling better, work through the home exercise program. And then you're like, okay, cool, now I'm back to running again.
Yeah. The other thing I think you just mentioned that's really important is someone who will prescribe a good home exercise program. So for most things, when you're first seen by a physical therapist or a chiropractor or a massage therapist, all the things we're going to talk about, if they immediately see you and say, okay, I need to see you back 3 times a week for 4 weeks, like right off the bat, that should raise some red flags. It doesn't mean they're wrong. Some conditions, for sure, that's the case. But for most things, you go see a physical therapist, say you've got some Achilles pain, right? You go in and they may have you come back 2 or 3 times that week to really do some testing, some hands-on work, you know, working that soft tissue, teaching you the right way to do exercises, and then let you go and say, I want you doing these at home, you know, 3 times a week, 4 times a week on your own for, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then come back and we'll check and see where you are. We'll progress it, let you go again. And then if anything changes in the interim, you know, for the worse, certainly come see us. That type of mentality is much more reasonable than someone who right off the bat is saying, okay, we're going to have you in here every week, X number of times for however long.
Yeah, absolutely. Once especially you get past that like acute phase, you don't need the soft tissue work, the hands-on things. And it's like, okay, this is in your court. And if you're the type A type of athlete and you're doing those things for 30 minutes, 4 times a week, then you're probably going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think there are kind of like with coaches, there are physical therapists who motivate differently, right? So there are some that will really push athletes who are injured and that's what they need. There are others who tend to be a little more soft and, you know, understanding, and you have to find what suits your personality. And so by the same token, you know, on one hand, I'm saying if you're with the run group and there's that person in the run group who's a PT and is known to be great and you go see them, there still may be a personality clash, right? It may not be the right one for you, and that's okay. Then you're back to kind of finding who does suit you. So trying to figure that out before there's a big injury, I think is a really worthwhile pursuit.
Yeah. And there's a lot of PTs that will come in and kind of do just an assessment and give you an idea of things. And there's even models that kind of group. I've got trainer on here. They'll give you the strength training like through the physical therapist. Like you can go in, the PT clinics are looking less like clinics and more like gyms. I love it. There's a squat rack. There's barbells. They're like, let's see you do a deadlift. Let's see you do some squats. They give you some ideas around those things. And I think that's an important bridge that a lot of people lose after they finish a bout of physical therapy or going to doing their home exercise program. They either taper off with those things or they don't continue to progress and get stronger. And I think that's where having communication with a good strength coach or somebody that's really familiar with like post-injury return to sport and that sort of a thing can help you continue to progress and get stronger and then come back and hopefully not be as likely to be injured again.
Yeah, for sure. And if I agree with you that a PT clinic that has either a good relationship with a gym or trainer or even a seamless one, like you said, where you almost can't tell the difference. It's just a matter of who you're seeing in that same facility. That could be an ideal setup. And you transition from physical therapy to, you know, guided exercise program, to then you're no longer hurt, but you recognize that this needs to continue and to progress. And so you've got someone that, I mean, maybe it's a trainer you see 3 times a week, but maybe it's just a trainer you see once a month who says, okay, you've been doing these things. We know your history from injury and whatnot. You've been doing great. You're progressing. Here's how we want your plan to look for the next month, given your training and competition and goals, travel, whatever. And so just having someone to kind of go back and touch base with that can oversee that process and probably oversee some of the new exercises as you start to do, you know, this or that in the gym, they can watch you and say, you know, you're doing it right, or you need to tweak this a bit. The form's not great.
Yeah, it's really helpful to get that second set of eyes. And I think it's just as an athlete who's gone through these things, it's nice to be told, hey, like actually that doesn't look as bad. Like I went to a PT clinic a while back. We did some back squats and I was just like, oh, I'm terrible at these. Like they never go well. I swear it was the best 10 back squats I've ever done in my life. And it's like, actually, you look pretty balanced. And it just was kind of a good confidence boost to be like, okay, I don't need to catastrophize my left knee moving in just a little bit or like my toes flaring out and everything was fine.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. So, you know, at this point, if you've got a coach that you work with to some degree, you know, daily or just maybe even setting down, you know, macro training goals, you've got a PT and a trainer, you're really off to a great start. And the reason I say that it doesn't have to be this daily interaction with these folks, one is because for most people, it truly doesn't. It also gets expensive. And the higher touch, the more the more interactions you have on a personal basis, the more time consuming it is too. And, you know, if we're to understand that the primary listener to this is a recreational athlete who is also working and has family engagements and hopefully other interests as well, then it doesn't make sense to think that you're going to be going to a trainer three times a week, doing your other, you know, training around your sport, whether that's something like cycling or golf or tennis, seeing the coach for those things. It quickly fills up, but you can have these kind of touch point relationships with these folks where you see them occasionally to work on specific things if needed, and then dig in when something big comes up.
Yeah. Probably the one on this list that's the most commonly just a touch point talk to every year or five is going to be just a general practitioner. So just a good old doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a tough one. It's probably a question I get multiple times a month from people I know. And it really depends on what you're looking for. But I think if I was to kind of generalize here, most active athletic folks who are doing something recreational, who are very involved in their own health, are looking for a primary doctor who takes a little bit of the same approach to practice. So someone who is, you know, if you go in and say, hey, I'm not feeling great. And they say, well, okay, you know, what's the problem? And you say, well, normally I train 12 hours a week, but this week it's all I can do to get six. You don't want that person to laugh you out of the office and say, I don't have any patients that are training 6 hours a week. You're fine. Instead, you want someone who understands that, you know, this is a very important thing to you. And that's a really significant change in your health status. If you've gone from feeling good at 12 hours a week to struggling at six and not knowing what's wrong. And that can be a hard thing to find. So when I point people toward GPs or like how to find a general practitioner, locally, there's, I mean, a couple of folks that I know who are not of that mindset, and I can point them there, but globally, it often involves finding someone who is dual trained in something like family medicine or internal medicine and sports medicine. And when you find someone who's got that type of approach to it, I just feel like more often than not, those vague-ish complaints that are important to us as athletes, but kind of uncommon in a typical medical practice, they get taken a little more seriously.
Yeah. And I'd love to, I guess, give you the chance here to kind of talk about kind of the difference between MDs and DOs in this position.
Yeah. So, I'm a DO. In the US, you can be either an MD or a DO and have full medical privileges. Excuse me. I'm drinking my hot chocolate. Have full medical privileges, at any hospital, do any specialty you want to do. Historically, DOs are trained in a more, what you might call holistic, mindset. You know, how is one system of the body connected to the other? You know, recognizing they don't live in isolation. We get some training in kind of manual therapy, kind of like physical therapy or chiropractic. So it's a wider lens through which we're trained. Again, historically, I kind of think, quite honestly, in the last decade or two that has changed a good bit. I think there are lots of MDs who come out with a very wide viewpoint on things. And there are lots of DOs who come out very singularly focused on what it is they want to do. And so I don't know that that's good or bad necessarily. You know, if you're going to see someone who is an ultra specialist in what they do, you want them to have a very tight, singular focus on that thing. I get that. But from the standpoint of a primary care physician, I think most people want someone who steps back, takes a very broad view, understands how the body systems work together, but also how that person functions in their day-to-day and their priorities. And I'd say it's probably my bias that you might be more likely to find that with a DO. Chances are, I think it's something like a third of practicing physicians coming out of school right now are DOs. You may be seeing one already, and just a lot of people don't know it. But I don't know that it's as clear cut a direction anymore to go and say, hey, that's what I want. So this is who I'm going to see.
Yeah. I think just a lot of people don't know what the difference is.
Yeah.
I had a friend that had a doctor's appointment, and she was like a little apprehensive, and was like, oh, he's a DO. Is this going to be good? And I was like, oh, Kevin's a DO. And she's like, oh, okay. Everything will be fine.
Yeah. 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 I think there's not a lot of, education or understanding around it, but that's fine. And that's changing, I think.
So we don't have many specialists on this list, because I think that's something that starts to get very individual. And there's such a long list of those things based on the conditions that you have. But hopefully if you're, you know, if you have an endocrinologist or something like that, they're somewhat grouped into this because they're going to be more familiar with how your training is going to impact that. And hopefully that's just on you to have that medical relationship.
It is. But I also think if you've found a good primary care doctor, they can point you toward those folks. So within a community, I know here in Knoxville, if I was to send somebody for an orthopedic problem and they're a cyclist, it's probably going to be a clavicle. I know who understands that well, right? If I need to send someone for a cardiac concern and they're a runner, you know, I know who understands that well. It doesn't mean they have to be or are necessarily the best cardiologist in town. I mean, I think that's hard to define anyway, but what's more important is that they're a really good cardiologist who understands where the patient is coming from. And so I think, yeah, you don't have to have all those folks picked out. That would be a little bit paranoid. But I do think it goes back to the importance of finding that primary doctor who is tied into the community, understands you, understands what it is you might be looking for, and has a little bit of knowledge into the things that you're interested in, you know, because it could be that specialist is a nutritionist, right? That, or a dietitian, and you've got questions around, you know, fueling or your blood sugar is going up and you don't want to just start a medication. And so that person says, well, you know, here's somebody that works really well with motivated individuals. Why don't you go see them for a while? So if we draw it back to that GP, I think that's a good place to really lay the framework for finding good specialists.
On the note of cardiology, I know we've had Dr. Bagish on here in the past. Is there enough, continuing education or support that's created the sports psychology discipline that if an athlete is out there, that it's worth it to look for that when seeking out a cardiologist, or is it still something that's somewhat new?
No, you said sports psychology, but you meant sports cardiology.
Yeah, sports cardiologist. Excuse me.
No, I got you. So it's a specialty or subspecialty that is relatively new, but I think has propagated enough to the point that for most people who are pretty recreationally active, you know, if you're running half marathons, if you're a triathlete, or you know, if you're really taxing your cardiovascular system through sport on a regular basis, I would highly recommend seeking out a sports cardiologist. And most really good cardiologists I know they're pretty upfront about the fact that they are not schooled that well in the sport specific aspects of cardiology. Now, if they take a personal interest in it, they may have learned a lot of it on their own, and that's fine. I think there's still room for that, especially when a subspecialty is new. You can imagine somebody who comes through school and training everything 12, 15 years ago, but there was really no program. So there was two or three. But they took an interest and they learned a lot of it on their own. We even have in medicine some routes through which people can be grandfathered into these specialties because there was no way for them to train formally at the time. But we're reaching a point, I think, where there has been enough formally trained sports cardiologists that if you have a real cardiac concern as a recreational or professional athlete, it warrants seeing somebody. Even if it's you see somebody for one consultation and they say, hey, here's what's going on. Your cardiologist at home can handle this. You know, we'll be in touch with them, send them our notes and all that stuff. I think it's a worthwhile venture. And I think you're starting to be able to find them more easily. I mean, certainly the program at Boston, I think it's hard to argue that it's not the best in the country, if not the world. really some of the pioneers of this. Dr. Bagish isn't there anymore. He's in Switzerland, but the program is fantastic. But there's more and more. You know, we send people here regionally to Emory in Atlanta, and they've got a great program. It seems at first like that's maybe a heavy lift. You're like, oh, I've got to go to Atlanta. But it's a 3.5-4 hour drive. And I mentioned that not because people in Knoxville listening to this are so interested in how far Atlanta is, but wherever you are listening, there's probably something that, sure, it's going to take a day instead of an afternoon, but it's a worthwhile use of that day. So you drive 2, 3, 4 hours, see somebody who's really expert, get a great opinion, find out if you need to be seeing them or if you can just kind of get the diagnosis, the plan, and carry it forth at home.
Yeah. And ideally it's not something you're having to do regularly. So right. it's kind of worth it to take that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not to say that every athlete has to go be screened by a cardiologist. Far from it. This is, if you have a concern, a cardiac concern as an athlete, that would be a good specialty to seek out.
Yeah. Which again is something you talk with your GP about and kind of use the PCP to kind of guide that.
Idea. Exactly.
Cool. Yeah. So we'll move on a little bit from the medical side of things, or I guess, I don't know if I'll say that and they'll appreciate it, but I've got massage therapists, which I could have put after the PT a little bit earlier, but I think having a good relationship with a massage therapist, body worker, somebody who's very familiar with sports, how the body moves, and also familiar with you is really valuable kind of in your athletic journey.
Oh, I think it's huge. And this can take multiple forms. Like you said, massage therapy, a general body work person, soft tissue, like whatever they call themselves, whatever their training is. But I think is someone that it can be hugely important on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, on just the basis of an injury, however you want to use them. But I think there's a lot of reason to seek these people out. And again, have them in your contacts, know who you're going to reach out to if needed. I think a lot of us would love to have weekly massage, body work, but it's also not a real realistic thing for a lot of us. And I get that. So just having that resource, you know, I can imagine a scenario. We talked about the Achilles starting to hurt and going to see a PT. I can imagine a scenario where you're a runner, Achilles flares a little bit. I mean, a little bit is bothering you, but you get on top of it, you see a PT, and then from there you're seeing a massage therapist 2-3 times a week for a couple weeks, right? To help just kind of aid the program. And you're able to run through it, you knock it all out, and 10 days or 2 weeks, you're back to normal, good to go. Versus just babying it and you know, not seeing the PT, not getting any soft tissue work done, maybe taking time off of running, and then 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, it's getting worse, then you're starting the process. So yeah, this is one I think it's also a low barrier to entry. It doesn't require, you don't have to worry about insurance covering it and things like that, which obviously is great if somebody, if the insurance plan covers it, but that comes with its own issues. For massage therapy and soft tissue work, you can make an appointment, just go get it done.
Yeah. And that's the same thing, you know, being more available to go and get these things done by having those relationships really condenses that timeline of things. I mean, I wish that I could get in quicker sometimes with the local massage therapist that I go and see, but it's nice to just have that kind of ongoing monthly visit. And then if something flares up, like, hey, can you work me in? Typically they'll make it work for people that they see regularly. Yeah. And then you've built that relationship with.
Yeah, no, that's a great point with all these, folks, minus maybe the GP. Well, no, I'd say with that too. Like if you've got that relationship and something comes up, you're much more likely to be worked in than if you're cold calling and saying, hey, I'm a local runner, local whatever, and I've got an issue. Can you get me in? And the good ones are going to be busy, right? That's not to say that, you know, if you call somebody and they say, hey, can you be here in an hour, that they're not good. They may have an opening, whatever. But in general, the good folks in these categories are busy. So having that relationship goes a long way.
Yeah. And then one that I put on here, since I'm kind of going into the field, is a mental performance coach. And then I'll like hyphenate that and say that also, you know, if you're working with somebody who's a sports psychologist or a therapist that focuses in sports psychology, kind of in that same ballpark. But I think that's something that's also really valuable to include in like your monthly, weekly, or just kind of seasonally routine.
I think it's huge. And I would love for, I'd say the majority of our professional patients here at Podium have a mental performance coach or a sports psychologist. I think it's something that many more recreational athletes would do really well to employ at some level. Like you said, even if it's just, you know, doing maybe some initial sessions so that person knows you and then being able to reach out to them when needed or at certain intervals through the season. But I'm going to turn this one on you. How do you find someone in this field that to kind of start to work with?
So it's really, it's pretty sticky because there's two sides to it. So there's kind of where I'm going through the mental performance coaching side of things, or the mental performance consulting as they'll call it. And what you would want to look for there is something called the CMPC, like certification, which just means they've gone through an accredited master's program. And what they're going to focus on is more actual like performance techniques, really focused on your athletic journey, and just kind of be there as a, as just somebody to kind of like provide those skills. And then there's a lot of therapists and psychologists that have maybe a counseling degree, master's in social work, even a PhD that are athletes that want to go and kind of focus more on working with athletes, but also kind of have a wider lens to work through so that they can talk about more just like actual therapy related things, getting into your life and outside of that. So it's kind of what you want to get out of it. The same way we talked about with some of these other things, like what you're looking for with that relationship. It's like, hey, I really want to learn about some of these things I've heard on a podcast. Like I want to do some breath work. I want to do some visualization. I want to, you know, learn what's holding me back a little bit and like my pre-performance anxiety. You'd probably be well suited to work with somebody who's in that mental performance coaching range. If you want somebody that you can have a bit more of a free ranging conversation with, but that understands the value of training. Cause I think that's when I've talked to therapists that aren't really familiar with training, they don't respect as much how powerful like the sport is that you're spending 15 hours a week on, and why it is a big deal that training's not going well or that sort of a thing. So I think looking for someone who works as a sports psychologist in that range is also really valuable.
Yeah. So that's kind of similar to the physical therapist or GP or whatever, is finding someone, you know, if you are stepping outside of that mental performance consultant role, you know, finding someone who understands sport. We've got a number of patients who have needed to work with and have worked with, like a clinical psychologist, right? You know, depression, anxiety, whatever, but you can't remove that from the athletic realm. And so, you know, there are times where, you know, if those are struggles of yours, having that resource is huge, but making sure that they understand the sport component is also, I think, massively important. Whereas if you're not somebody who struggles with those things on a regular basis, they may pop up. But if, like you said, it's less of the clinical aspect and more of the, more of like a mindset of performance, then finding that mental performance consultant would be ideal. And I mean, I don't know how frequently these two coexist, but a coach or a trainer with that type of background seems to me like really the golden ticket, not because you're sitting here and soon to be that. But I'm serious. If you could wrap those two into one role, that's of all the things we've looked at, those are the two I would probably say go best hand in hand.
Yeah. And that's why I approached it in that way. And in our program, we talk a lot about like to and through the coach, and, you know, helping coaches understand how they employ like the tenets of sports psychology for coaching to be better coaches and to help like people, especially youth athletes, develop more holistically. Cause that was, I mean, I'm sure you've had plenty of experiences with coaches that did not understand how to, like treat children properly. And we're just, you know, they leave that with you. But I think it's valuable to have both of those things together. And then one thing that I'll say that really applies to all of these is something we talk about a lot in our program. And that's kind of this idea of like building it instead of fixing it. So building up your skills, whether it's mentally, strength-wise with your trainer, with your coach, like you're building all of these things as opposed to waiting until there's something that needs to be fixed. So you've built that relationship with the physical therapist before you're like, okay, now I my knee's bothering me, you know where you're going to go so that you kind of have those contingency plans. And that's going to be really helpful in getting you back to training quicker, getting you ready if you've got a race coming up, and then also just calming your mind down when it starts to spiral, when any of these things pop up.
Yeah, no, that's a really good way to think about it. I think it's also important to recognize which one of these roles are kind of the quarterback roles for you individually. And so it may be that your coach is the one that you have very regular interaction with. And, you know, when other things come up, they help with communication with the other folks. You know, one of the things that we do here at Podium that I think is really worthwhile, and honestly, one of my favorite things that will occur in a week, is get together on a call with an athlete's coach, trainer, physical therapist, whatever it is they're going through, you know, swing coach, sports psychologist, get everybody in the same room, virtually or otherwise, and have the conversations that are important to that athlete. It doesn't have to happen. I mean, it can be an annual experience. It could be quarterly. But I think finding folks that are willing to do that if and as needed for you is also a big part of picking the right individuals, because you want that communication. It doesn't do any good for an orthopedist to see you do imaging, diagnose you with something, and send you to a physical therapist with very little instruction. Just like, oh, he's got a rotator cuff tendinopathy, evaluate and treat, send him off. You know, that you might as well have just gone to the physical therapist for that. What you want is that communication that helps make each step seamless and allows for the expertise to kind of slide from one category to the next. And yeah, I mean, that may be something to ask as you interview folks is, you know, would you be up for a annual team call? And I think most, I mean, I'm going out on a limb, but I think most individuals in these roles who are really, really into it would love doing that, because it makes their work with you better and more fruitful.
Yeah. And it's a really unique opportunity for a lot of these people to like have that sort of a setup. So I think in this situation, like we do this for a lot of our patients, but you're going to probably have to do it for yourself if you don't have like a medical practice managing it. But communicating with them, getting the email stream together, it's exciting to be able to hear what other people are doing about the same problem. Those professionals then get to network with this other community of physical therapists, massage therapists, whoever it might be. And it's really helpful to kind of put everything into perspective and get that collaborative approach to it so that you're not working against each other or you're not all necessarily doing the same thing.
Yeah. It's a win-win for sure. I think everybody likes it, but your point's a good one that you will have to take some ownership as the athlete in managing this, right? There may be the one person on your team that you can really hand this off to, but most likely they are all interested but busy individuals outside of you. And so if you are the data collection spot, you know, you make sure that you have all your records that you can share quickly, that, you know, you're the person who arranges calls between either the team, but more likely two individuals, you know, the doctor and the physical therapist, or the coach and the trainer, or whatever it is. It's going to go much better for you. And I think I mentioned maintaining the records. That goes a really long way. If you can give your physical therapist access to your training log, if you can give your physical therapist quick access to your imaging, your MRI reports and things like that, that goes a really long way to people having to request these things from other individuals. So just, I'd recommend staying on top of that for sure.
Yeah, and bring it to that. If you have a first visit, bringing those things, yeah, like you will blow the secretary's mind if you show up and have previous visit notes, previous lab values, imaging, like PT notes, whatever it might be. Like, and it's really valuable for you to keep that. That's something, I mean, it's not really advertised as something we do, but like that's a huge part of, I think, our practice is consolidating, yeah, all of those things and creating that. You know, we use like Heads Up to kind of consolidate some things and whatever. And it's realized that like, I can do that myself. And then now I tell my friends, I'm like, hey, if you go to the doctor, save that.
Yeah.
Like, there's some software that does it for them, like Simply Practice and different things like that, but still print it out, put it in a file, save it for yourself so that you have it. And it saves time.
It's huge. I mean, I personally, I just keep a lot of it in a Dropbox file. And I know people are out there saying it's not secure and all this. If anybody's interested in reading my cardiology report, I'm happy to send it to you. I don't care. I just want to have access to it. And so I went and saw a new doctor just for a, you know, establishing care visit. And the lady at the front desk was just saying, well, you know, if you'll sign this stuff and, you know, we can get your records and it'll take a couple of weeks. I was like, how about I just hand it to you? Right. It's all right here. You can scan it in. So it's really a huge thing if you have access to that.
Yeah. So I think that's, did I miss anybody on our list here that you would add in before we wrap up?
The only thing I think I would add would be a nutrition expert. So nutritionist, dietitian, I think it's important to recognize a dietitian is someone who is formally schooled in nutrition, often from a clinical standpoint. So, you know, working with sick populations and using food as medicine, which doesn't mean a dietitian can't help you in sport by any means. They're actually probably have a very, very deep understanding of nutrition. Nutritionist is kind of a catch-all term. And so there's nothing formal that someone has to do to call themselves a nutritionist. So in that regard, it's important to kind of see who you're talking to, what their background is. A lot of them are really well credentialed and experienced, and that's fine. But you could also get somebody who just decided that they wanted to start doing this and they read a few articles online and opened up a little shop. So I'd be careful, but I think having a nutrition resource that you can go to is also huge, kind of in the same way we talked about the others. That might be on a regular basis, but probably not. Probably it's more along the lines of, you know, you decide you want to lose weight or put on weight over a period of a season, or you've got a big event coming up and you want to create a fueling plan for it and then test that ahead of time and tweak it and make sure it's right. That's when having this person can be a huge asset. I don't think most people need somebody writing a meal plan for them every day. That's not what I'm suggesting here.
Yeah. And all of these, you know, it's a great opportunity for you to learn. But like you said, I'll reiterate, looking for the RDN, not just going with, you know, whoever you've seen on Instagram and things like that, that just have a nutritionist certification. You can get them pretty easily online. There's all kinds of different ways to get around it, but use your better judgment and kind of vet the person that you're working with. And I think it's really helpful to just have all of these different things. And slowly you learn from each of these connections, each of these interactions with the dietitian, with the mental performance coach, whoever it is. So you're becoming a greater athlete, and then you'll know when to draw back on their expertise in a race season, in an off season, in a preseason, whatever it is for yourself. And that kind of all filters back up to that coach having a plan for you.
Yeah. So hopefully you can understand with this or kind of visualize a scenario where you've got maybe one or two people that you go to regularly, and then you've got others that you have a relationship that you understand is situational, but that the situation will likely arise. And that's, I think, kind of a sweet spot. You know, you've got maybe a coach that you see regularly, maybe a doctor that you see once or twice or once every year or two. And you know, a soft tissue work person, and the others can be kind of as needed, but at least, you know, were the need to arise, where would you go? And that, if you're in that spot as a recreational athlete, I think you're in a really good spot.
Yeah. I know I've got a pretty good list for all of these myself, and it's really nice to just kind of have that, feel confident with it. And then every now and then play professional and just have like a big week where I'm like, oh, cool. I've got the lab on Friday. I've got my massage therapist. I've got PT. And it's a full-time job, but like, yeah, I'm taking advantage this week.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's fun. It's fun sometimes just to dig into these things, which kind of brings me to one thing. We've never said this on the podcast before. But I think some people are aware of what we do here at Podium. And it's a very small practice. We work not with very many individuals at a given time. It's an annual commitment. And we typically have just no space for new patients. But because of some things that have changed with my travel schedule, particularly over the spring and summer, we're going to be opening up a couple slots. This isn't like a massive onslaught of patients. But there will be a couple openings this year, that are, it's kind of a rare occurrence for us. So I figured it'd be a nice spot in this episode to mention, because if you're looking to put together a team, and you understand the importance of that, then it may be something you're interested in. It's not for everybody, for sure. It is, as you can imagine, with a very small patient population, that annual commitment is, it's quite a commitment from a financial standpoint. But for anyone who may think it suits them and wants to reach out and learn more, you can contact us at our email address is info@podiumsportsmed.com. And we can tell you a bit more about it and see if it might suit you.
Yeah. And if you just have ideas for other episodes, questions that you kind of want us to talk about on air, I love getting those because it helps us know what the audience wants to listen to. And, you know, we're running out of ideas over here.
That's right. Yeah. The more ideas, the better. And this, like we said, is a direct extension of that. So anything that comes up, please send it our way. And if you've sent it and you haven't heard us talk about it yet, send it again. You know, we won't get mad. It's good to hear. It's good to be reminded of some of the good ideas that have come out in the past.
Yeah. Always love the feedback. And I really appreciate you all listening.
Yeah, me too. Thanks. Thanks for listening to The Podium. To hear more, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram, where I am at Dr. Kevin Sprouse. That's at Dr. Kevin Sprouse. The podcast posts at the_podium_podcast. You can also find and follow me on Strava. The content of this podcast is meant for general informational and educational purposes only and does not constitute medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. All listeners should speak with their doctor or medical practitioner before implementing any change in their healthcare regimen. If you're currently a patient at Podium, then you have an established doctor-patient relationship with me, and I'm happy to discuss this with you. If you're not currently a patient at Podium, nothing in this recording establishes a doctor-patient relationship between us, nor does it constitute the practice of medicine, nor the dissemination of medical advice. Should you implement any information contained herein without consulting your own physician, you do so at your own risk. The Podium Podcast is a Palm Tree Podco production. Our executive producer is Anthony Palmer, and the associate producer is Garrett Wright. Thanks to our digital team, Emily Miles and Caitlin Krings. The content for this episode was created by the team at The Podium.